previews, predictions, X Factors, season preview. We got so much to talk about on the next episode of the Messed Up Podcast.
Today's episode is sponsored by Aura. Are you tired of receiving spam phone calls to the point where you don't even want to answer your phone anymore? That's because data brokers sell your information to scammers and spammers and anybody else who may want to target you. That's right, your full name, your home address, your health records, it's all out there. That's why we've been using Aura. Aura shows you which data brokers are selling your information and automatically submits opt-out requests on your behalf. Not only does this stop scammers and hackers from getting and using your information, but it also protects you from them using that information to get into your social media accounts or bank accounts too. Aura is always on duty, looking to keep you safe so you can focus on anything else you need to focus on with peace of mind. So stop data brokers from exposing your personal information to that and visit our sponsor at aura.com/messed up. That's aura.com/messed up to get a 14-day free trial and see how much of your data is being sold. We value privacy here in the Messed Up Podcast, and there's no better way to ensure your safety online than by using Aura. Thank you, Aura, for sponsoring today's episode.
What is up, Mets fans? Welcome back to the season preview episode of the Mets Stuff Podcast. Put some sirens, whether it's me or James doing the editing here. There's going to be some Jamaican air horns. Whatever it is going on in the background. But we have got the season preview here for you guys. We're going to be talking about every player, every single thing that could possibly happen this year. X factors, predictions, expectations, roster construction, all that stuff that you would want to hear from a season preview episode. That's exactly what you're going to get. So let me do the quick plug here before we get going into about probably an hour plus worth of yapping about this team. So strap in if you're in the car. Maybe you'll catch this one on the way to work and on the way back. But regardless, if you like what you're listening to over here, make sure you are following us on all our social media at Mets Up on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok, as well as subscribe to the Mets Up Podcast YouTube channel if you want to see the video version of this. And if you're liking what you're listening to, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, drop us a rating, drop us a review, download, and subscribe. Remember, during the season, we will be dropping at least two episodes a week. One at the end of every single series will be coming out as soon as the series pretty much ends. Me and James will record that. And then there might be some just special stuff dropped here and there randomly with whatever's going on. Now that we're not with the team, we can do whatever we want. So we plan on doing kind of whatever we want. And over on the YouTube channel, you guys are going to get some exclusive content over there as well. That will not necessarily be a podcast episode. Like when we go to games, we're going to vlog or doing some quizzes. Whatever it is, a lot of content. That's my spiel. Now, let's start talking about some baseball. James, you excited? You ready to get going into this?
I'm so excited. I'm even like more excited because the last episode, the late night JD Martinez episode, I definitely had a few. I was out that night. shout out the other half in Brooklyn. Shout out Rates and Barrels podcast. Shout out Nick Pollock. I went out with Nick and Eno Saris and Derek Van Riper, a couple other baseball people. People I've been like reading and listening to for years and years. So very cool to like spend time like socially and talk baseball with them. But was out for a while. I was just at JD Martinez happened. We were all together. So it's cool being around a bunch of already drunk baseball people, half Mets fans, when you're like that team signs JD Martinez. People are talking about contract, people talking about fit, people talking about expectations. It's cool to just be in that environment. Then came back. It was a little nuts. So happy to really hunker down right now and focus up on a real thorough, thick season preview of the Mets.
Yeah. And as you said, you know, in the notes and as we talked about in the episode with JD Martinez, this is like the shot in the arm that the Mets kind of needed going into the season. Cause there, I don't want to say that there's been a malaise. We like to use that term a lot over here, but like crawling into the end of spring training, every single team's doing it. You're just like, we want the real games to start, and getting that JD Martinez contract that we've been waiting for all offseason. Mets fans have been clamoring for, dying for, getting finally like pen put to paper. Going into the season, Granty won't be here for opening day, but it does just give you a little bit more excitement now, a little bit more buzz around this team for one that maybe doesn't have the highest expectations, but I think both of us are cautiously optimistic about so far this year.
It's not even just the expectations for us, the fans, because this was definitely a big deal for us. Everyone, every Mets fan, I think, was very excited about this, besides the weird 5% Mark Vientos hive, which we'll talk about briefly in a little bit. But even you heard Pete and Lindor saying it, like, oh, this is a cool thing. Like, this is one, this is like, all right, we know this guy, JD Martinez. He's 30 and 100 guy every single year. Around baseball, he's an all-star. Everyone knows that. He's been called a hitting savant, which is a really cool thing. They're excited to have him in the locker room. But two, it's just kind of like a, it's like a stamp of approval for this roster from Davis Serra's front office. Like, I think you guys can win. This player who's an all-star thinks you guys can win. So everyone's going to come together now. Now this is just like a push for everybody in the right direction. Again, excitement for the fans is one thing, but it's like now I think there's even more of an enhanced belief from this team, which I'm sure they had already. They're professional athletes. They've been all saying all the right things all offseason, all spring. Like, we know it's not like last year, expectations-wise. We still think we have a lot of players in this locker room, still have a lot of guys who have won or used to winning. everything seems to be pushing the Mets towards a team that's, again, probably better than people expect. And the Fangraphs predictions were out after the J.D. Martinez signing. And they have us at exactly 81-81, which is right in the mix of the NL wildcard spot, two games behind the Giants and the Diamondbacks for the last spot, with the Cubs one win ahead of us, but one win behind the Giants and Diamondbacks. And I think it's such a really fun spot to be in, one that is like, this to me feels more Mets. I feel like as Mets fans, we've gotten away from what makes us feel Mets these last few years of Steve Cohen, because we were like, we're top dogs. We could do anything we want, sign anybody we want. We're expecting 100 wins a year after it happened literally exactly one time without any wins in a playoff series, or one win in a playoff series without advancing around. And Mets fans definitely got a little bit spoiled. But this is Mets shit now, where we have a ragtag bunch of dudes. We have a couple stars supplanting it. We don't know where some of the production is going to come from. We got one big signing now after the entire offseason is going to be a big part for us. And it's just, let's just play baseball and see if we could pick some people off and have some fun this summer.
Yeah, and I mean, even if you're looking at the gambling odds, like the Mets are 81.5 wins, according to a certain sports book, which will not be named. If they want to be named, they can pay us. We will take sponsorship. We will be happy to take your money. But we won't name you because you're not paying us. But yeah, they're at 81.5. And that has been, I think, the thing that both of us have really said this whole entire offseason, that this is a 500 Mets team. Like, on paper, you can look at it and you can say, this is a team that's going to win 81 games. But they have the ability to be 4 or 5 wins above that, 4 or 5 wins below that. That's kind of the range. It's like that 78 to 84, 85 wins. And that 81 feels like a really normal place, very comfortable place. Like you said, for us Mets fans, as we know, we had been a little bit, we were feeling hot. Mojo, really? You got to shake while I'm talking right here? Come on. Thought you were sitting down. But still watching the dog, for those of you at home listening, still watching the dog. And of course, he decides to make a ton of noise. But at the end of the day, this Mets team's expectations have been calmed, but I don't think it's a bad place to be, especially because there are a lot of good players on this roster, especially on the offensive side, a lot of really good guys out there.
Very much. I think even before we talk about the guys on the roster, we should again briefly talk about the weekend and the guys who are not on the roster, mainly the fact that Mark Fientos will not make this team, or at least to start the season, he will not make this team. And it was definitely a bit of a strange vibe, because they signed JD in Fientos' first at bat after signing JD Martinez. Oh my God, that was a real Freudian slip there. But Fientos hits a home run the next at bat. And I think it was off of, was it Libertor? I don't know. It was another like just soft toss and quadruple A guy, where it was like Fientos is ready for the call, blah, blah, blah. And I think it was an assumption that he would probably be the opening day DH and get these first 10 days while JD Martinez is getting some runs in Syracuse to get up to speed and his timing. But got sent down the next day for Zach Short, who's going to make the club. And beautiful moment for Zach Short. I don't know if many Mets fans saw this or caught this on Twitter. SNY, Jenny Mets had it, where Saturday morning, when these roster cuts were being made, it was Sunday morning. It was Sunday morning. Zach Short found out his grandma passed away. Sad thing. I got grandmas out there. I love my grandma. Mark has Yaya's other grandma. Tough year for him last year. But he grew up a Mets fan in the New York City area, and that she was a Mets fan as well. And then he said 2 hours after getting that news, he'd found out he made this team. And I'm sure Zach Short went most of this offseason really not thinking he had much of an opportunity to make this club. He was signed, I even believe, before Ronnie Mauricio tore his ACL, so that was a guy ahead of him. Joey Wendell had the guaranteed contract. He was ahead of him. And then he has all these other guys who could hit better than him who are ahead of him. And then he comes out in spring training. He plays great baseball. He can play multiple positions on the field. And he finds out he makes the team. And he has this really tearful interview. And it's just like, damn, you could really feel that emotion. It's like, it's a pretty special thing. He even said it was like a very emotional morning, of course, because he probably had like one of his lowest and one of his highest moments he's ever had within 2 hours of each other. But cool to see him on this team, and nice to see him, a guy with a lot of versatility, to have that last spot rather than someone like Fientos, who, as much as some people like him, has become very one-dimensional. And that one dimension is something that I think is very overstated as well.
Yeah. Super happy for Zach Short. Like you said, another lifelong Mets fan. Like, it's another cool little story to add to the thing. Love to hear that. And obviously thoughts go out to him with his family as well, with what went on. But that's got to be a little bit of bittersweet news for him. It's like, sad day, also probably one of the best days. That's also, I believe, the first time he's ever made the opening day roster for a Major League Baseball team too. So that's another huge thing for these players. Whether or not he has a huge impact for this team, whatever it's going to be, still a big thing for him. I will say, good little player. Just feels like kind of that better Luis Guillorme role, which is something that you kind of need on the bench a little bit more pop, a little bit more maybe versatile in the infield, in terms of he might not have the better hands, but he can play all the positions well. The other thing I want to talk about too, with the Fientos being sent down, is how viciously uncomfortable it was that they had him answer questions from reporters like that. Would have thought PR would have been on him a little bit more to maybe not have to answer those questions coming out early from a spring training game. Because I feel for Vientos, and I know I've been someone who's been critical of him in terms of his play and his production and just what I think of him as a player. But that was hard to watch. And awful. You feel for the guy because obviously he's frustrated. He's sad. Whatever the emotions he's going through, totally justified because up until, what, 4, 5, 6 days until the season's about to start, he was like, I'm going to make this team and I'm going to have a shot to be the DH. And for all intents and purposes, while he didn't play fantastic, he hit home runs. And that's probably what he was told to do is hit home runs. You have a shot to make this team. And as much as it sucks for him, I do think it's the right decision. I feel bad for him. You could see how uncomfortable it was. But at the end of the day, these are the decisions that I'm glad the Mets are making because it's not about feelings. It's not about vibes or friends or any of that kind of stuff. It's what is going to be the best team that gives us the best chance to win every single game. And I really do think David Stearns and Carlos Mendoza put together that team pretty well.
Yeah, I agree with you. But that Vientos stuff was weird. Usually SBR is much more protective. And I guess to this moment they were not. But I don't know. I do give a lot of credit to JD Martinez in this. Like the first thing he did seems like when he had on his sweats and was going for batting practice, put his arm around Mark Vientos. And there's a modicum of similarities to be drawn from between those two guys in their careers. Super. Because JD Martinez is another guy who never had a defensive home, has literally his whole career never had a defensive home, never even close to any defensive position. Took a long time to break out, 26, 27, 28 years old, before he really became an elite hitter with, again, like the Tigers and the Red Sox. And it took a lot of him fixing his with velocity, for learning how to pull the ball more, a lot of the problems that Vientos still had. But it is still just after the spring training, after last year, the long cup of coffee in the major leagues. So not a long cup of coffee. It was a moderate cup of coffee for Vientos major league. Just the issues with him that had just persisted, had not gotten better, which sucks because you see the high end, you see the power, you see the home runs. But I had a tweet from over the weekend about Mark Vientos against velocity, something we talked about a lot on this show last year, that for him to make that jump from minor leagues to the major leagues, he had to get better facing velocity. That's the biggest jump that you're going to see from AAA to the majors. In the major leagues, you're going to face like two or three guys a week that don't throw 95 miles an hour or faster. In the minor leagues, you might face two or three guys in a week that actually throw 95 miles an hour harder. And last year, after it was called up, Vientos faced 131 pitches of at least 95 miles an hour. His triple slash against those was 184, 273, 447, with a 36% whiff rate, a 42% chase rate, and a 30% zone contact rate. And 97 of those pitches were fastballs. Vientos did pretty well in sinkers last year at the hard. He hit the big home run of JT Chargois. He hit the big home run of Aroldis Chapman. And I remember one of those 95-mile-an-hour pitches, just because this person's an alien, was off of Joan Duran. And Vientos hit a really hard ground ball. Wound up being a double play, but he smoked a ground ball, which you could... That's it.
And he got a hit off of Felix Bautista too, right? Didn't he? Did he smoke a double off of him?
I think a double off Bautista, yeah. But that was the four-seam fastball. But again, now off the four-seam fastballs. Because Vientos just... The swing is longer, and it's a little... He does a little better lower in the zone, because it's such a longer swing. So he's going to be better against the sinkers, the pitches with the downward slope, than the pitchers with like the fastballs, the upward slope. Against 97 fastballs, 95 miles an hour faster, 115, 172, 269 triple slash, 42% whiff rate, 48% chase rate, which is ungodly bad, and only a 25% in-zone contact rate. It's just, it wasn't good enough. And he spent the offseason working on defense, and it seemed like the spring training did get a little bit better at it. But again, this spring, it was like 4% walks, 30% strikeouts without a defensive home. It's hard. I understand without JD Martinez, it made sense for him to be on the roster because you had a high-end power bat from the right side. But if you can't hit velocity, it's hard for you to be a successful major leaguer. And then if you don't offer anything else besides what you can do at the plate, but you have a big hole at the plate, like you have to get better to make an impact. And that's not, we're not closing the door on Mark Vientos. We're not closing the book on him. No. I feel awkward sometimes tweeting this stuff now, because now that we've been on the inside and we've met a lot of these guys, and they're all really good guys. Like seeing this tweet about Vientos having like 150,000 impressions, I'm like, God, I really hope Probably Mark Vientos didn't. That's what I'm saying. Like, there's a good chance Mark Vientos saw this tweet and is like in his locker right now, and I'm one of the reasons that he's like feels like shit. But it's just, I don't know. We gotta get impressions. We gotta say the things that when they come up. But it's just, it sucks. He's a good guy. He's gotta get a little bit better. I'm not saying he can't, but right now he isn't.
Yeah, right now he is not good enough to help this team as much as they need. And if he smokes it like he has in the past in AAA, we will see him up at the major league level, and he will have the opportunity to make an impact for the team again. The other kind of last final roster spot here that's still up in the air at the time of recording is going to be that last bullpen spot, which seems to be between Michael Tonkin, Sean Reed Foley, and Johan Ramirez, or two spots for three guys. Yes. We don't know. And to be fair, any way you go, I think is fine. The only thing that sucks is you're going to lose one of these guys. Another team's going to pick them up instantly, and they're not going to be a Met this season, it seems like. So who do we think probably is going to get those last two spots? I mean, Tonkin, I think, is the one, and then it's between SRF and Johan Ramirez, right?
Yeah, again, we probably want to spend like maybe 20 more seconds talking about this because we're 15 minutes into the episode, and all we've talked about is backup relievers, Mark Vientos, JD Martinez, Zach Short. But
that's what you want.
Tonkin, I think, is the lock because he gives bigger workload floor than like most other relievers in his bullpen. And he was just through the most innings of any reliever last year and was pretty good at them. And so I think that's something valuable. Then a part of me still thinks I have the Mets official Twitter account, which has been very active today. The Mets official Twitter account as active as they've been in a very long time. Talk about that later. Just ready for that like final tweet for the official roster spot. But I have a sneaking suspicion that maybe they manipulate Tyler McGill because they don't need the fifth starter for the first couple days of the season. Send him down, keep all the relievers, and just wait for someone to get hurt for a week and then make your decision. Or just, I know a lot of spotlight's going to be on the Mets faking injuries right now, but there probably is a phantom injury that can be made, that pitching staff. But I don't know, it's fatigue. I mean, Jorge Lopez's velocity was a little down, so was Diekmans, but I think that might have been them taking it easy in the spring. Same with Drew Smith, but I don't know. If I had to pick, I would probably pick Tonkin, and I think I would just take Sean Rifoli because command's a little better than Ramirez, and the stuff is still really good. But I'd like all those guys. Even a reliever the Mets got rid of early in the offseason, Justin Slayton, looks amazing for the Red Sox after the Mets picked him up in the Rule 5 draft. He's like a future closer, so I don't know. Maybe they did think this bullpen was quite deep, and with major league guys, it low-key is.
Yeah, no, I mean, the team's looking good. Now we can actually start talking about the real guys, the actual stuff going on with this team.
Oh, one more thing. We're going to wear a Bud Harrelson patch this season.
Ooh, nice, okay.
Which I like, really good.
Yeah.
Honoring an all-time Met.
Yeah, we killed the black jerseys, but at least we had the patch, which will be a nice addition because the black jerseys look horrendous right now. I don't know if you guys caught those on Twitter, but they are
bad.
They went from being some of the best jerseys in baseball to one that I would not spend even a cent on. They look horrible, but...
We're not buying any official jerseys this year. It's official stance of the Messed Up Podcast, DH Gate. We're not giving them our money. Never again.
We can't. We can't do it. Not 1 year after they got rid of us. Maybe 2 years. We'll see how we feel.
Not me, maybe never again. But now we want to talk about some real stuff. We want to talk about where this Mets team can exceed expectations. What can happen this Mets team to make them good? Who are going to be the X factors? And we've had these conversations before earlier in the offseason. Now we want to talk about because we're so close. We're on the razor's edge. And just what gets his team to the playoffs? What makes his team win 85 games instead of 81? What could even make them win 87, 88? I'm not even going to say 90 because I think that's crazy, but like, what can be worth those 5 wins for the Mets? How do we get to the playoffs? I wanted to ask you, what do you think is the most important thing possibly to getting this Mets team to the playoffs?
Truthfully, the most important thing is the pitching. Like, we need one of these starting pitchers to step up, and I don't necessarily know if it's going to be like a Manaea, or let's even say Severino. Like, it might have to be like a Christian Scott who comes up late. It might have to be a Mike Vassell. It might have to be Tyler McGill. I think it's more of those back end guys that we have more question marks about what their actual floor and ceiling looks like, rather than the guys like Manaea, Hauser, Severino, where we kind of are comfortable with what they're going to be. And honestly, we need Kodai Senga back as soon as possible. If we can get him back in May, or let's say June is the earliest that we can get him back, even getting him for those 3 or 4 months down the stretch could very well be the difference between 3 and 4 wins for this team over the rest of the season, and that could be 81 wins, 84 wins right there. It's going to be the starting pitching, without a doubt.
Yeah, I think I like how you took the ceiling approach, because I was going to very opposite, take the floor approach. We just need the Hauser, Manaea, McGill, Quintana quadrant to just be acceptable. We can't have a 6 ERA at the end of May from any of those guys. It just can't happen. Like, maybe someone has one awful start and then like 5 pretty good ones, so the ERA is 6, but it's in process wise more. But we just can't. We saw last year how much it compounds when starting pitchers don't give length. It was weeks last year before a Mets pitcher completed 6 innings. You can't have that again. you need Sean Manaea, and you need Adrian Howe. I mean, Manaea is a weird one because we even saw this last spring start where he looked really good, but that last inning he fell apart and his velocity went from 94 to 91. And you could see it last year in the way the Giants used him. And so I've been kind of saying all offseason, and when we signed him, that's just, he might not be as traditional of a starter as Mets and other people want, but it's just being able to manipulate him in a way that makes him as efficient as possible. That's why, again, a guy like Michael Tonkin comes in handy and is very good there. That's why a guy like Jose Budo, who's going to be on this roster sooner rather than later, becomes a glue guy for the staff. If Jose Budo, if Hauser, Manaea, Budo combine for 400 innings and a 4.2 ERA, that's kind of like you just had what used to be 2 traditional good back end starters, but you just displaced it to a third guy. But still the same effect at the end of the day, just with an extra roster spot, which they need. They're going to need to be creative with the back. Senga has to come back and he has to be good. And Severino looks like an X factor, and he's healthy right now. And he was throwing bullets at the end of spring, and he's a guy I'm just high on in general. I did my bold predictions on Twitter the other day, and I really think he could be an all-star. Like he looks like he has everything that we've been waiting for him to have for a few years. Just please be healthy. And it's just those guys, the back end, even McGill, just holding it together, just keeping that shoulder attached to the arm, just everybody there pitching good innings, getting through five, sometimes getting through six, two runs on the board, handing it to the bullpen with the game intact. That is going to be so important to this team, because I think one of the strengths right now might be the floor of pitching. But again, if two of these guys fall apart, it's not going to be true anymore.
Yeah, and I think I'm just also really confident in this Mets lineup. Like, I think they are a top 10 lineup in Major League Baseball. Is that a crazy thing to say? I think they are, because
we're saving bold predictions for the next segment.
Yeah, but I at the end of the day, like, I think this lineup is going to be really good offensively, like, especially adding JD Martinez now, giving that extra length to that lineup, could be really good, to the point where I think they're going to be able to score enough runs to win. It's just going to be about limiting now with the pitching, which that's like, oh, stupid. That's so obvious. That's how baseball works. You got to score more than the other team. But sometimes it is that simple, and the lineup is going to be able to score enough runs, especially if some of the other players in that lineup take the step forward or a bounce back like we hope they do. It's just about the pitching, and it's super boring. That's like the most boring X factor, is like the pitching needs to be good. Like, yeah, no shit. Of course it does. But like, that's the problem with this roster. That was the problem coming in. That was the problem last year. That's been the problem the last few years, is getting the pitching down. If we can do that, this is a team that can definitely make the playoffs.
Definitely. You'd love JD Martinez coming to the lineup, giving extra length. Mark loves extra length. That's his favorite thing.
Love extra length.
But it's again, we'll start Longer with the lineup. For this to actually be a top 10 lineup, like, you need Pete, Nimmo, Lindor, and JD Martinez to all be something like they were each of the last couple of years, where Nimmo's probably one that some people have the least faith in, because it's weird for us to realize Brandon Nimmo's like an all-star caliber player at this point, like one of the 3 to 5 best left fielders in all of baseball, but like, that's where he is. And the JD Martinez, what?
I've got beef real quick that I want to just lead your attention to. ESPN put out their top 100 players rankings. Brandon Nimmo was one, ranked 91st, behind Kyle Schwarber, behind Jeremy Peña, behind those players. They were like, he's one of the most underrated players in the league. I'm like, and you're doing it. You did it again. 91st behind Schwarber and Jeremy Peña. Are we crazy?
Do you think that's bad? SNY on Tuesday ranked top 10 players combined between the Mets and Yankees rosters, and Brandon Nimmo was not on it.
The Mets broadcast didn't have one of the best players on both of these two teams ranked. Who made it ahead of him?
Real quick, I don't know if it was Martino or McCarron. Maybe you can try and find it right now, but I saw it while I was scrolling earlier today. But it was Starling Marte was the 10th guy on there ahead of Brandon Nimmo, which is...
But ahead of Brandon Nimmo?
You know anything about baseball if you think that's true, but... Painful. But again, now you have to have those guys do what they have to do. And I think all of those guys could even be better than they were last year, besides Martinez, because he's not going to be hitting behind Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman anymore. Like, sometimes you Betts and you're a free man, but that's going to be different. But he's thinking he could still be okay. But those four guys just probably combining for a clean, 400 RBIs, 120 homers, 140 homers, that'd be awesome. But then I think the big part of this Mets lineup, like you say, being a top 10 lineup, comes from the next section of the lineup. Alvarez, Marte, McNeil, and Beatty. Those three guys right there. Because there's a lot of outcomes for those four guys right there. Like, Brett Beatty could do anything from what he did last year to being like a guy who's 20% better in league average, 25 home runs. Jeff McNeil's on-base percentage could literally be anywhere from 380 to 280, which would be a drastically different player. Starting Marte, I have no idea. He was so pitiful this spring. And there's a good chance he's the DH on opening day, it kind of feels like right now, based on the way they align this roster, just because... Not putting Vientos up means you probably put Tyrone Taylor in the field, which means you probably put Marte in the bench, where you're going to have a light hitting DH in the 7-hole. It's going to be miserable all year. I hate that he's on this contract with this team. And it's just, then it comes down to Alvarez, who's probably the one with the most ceiling, but also I think that, and we're part of this, we're probably overrating him a little bit. He was, what, a 290 on-base percentage guy last year? Like, if he can't get that on-base percentage to 320, like, then it suddenly he's like, okay, we still really need a step for you to become someone who's actually a difference maker in this lineup. And maybe two of those things happen, maybe three of them happen, maybe four of them happen, maybe none of them happen. But, like, those four guys are the ones where there's a lot of motion, a lot of wiggle room, a lot of ceiling, and not a lot of floor.
Yeah, and a guy like Alvarez doesn't have to take as big of a step forward if Marte, if McNeil, if Beatty, like, if these other things in this lineup happen. And bringing in JD Martinez does also give Alvarez, like, a little bit more cushion of, like, I'm not here to now be the second best power hitter on this team. Like, I am here, to be like the six hitter, the five, whatever it's going to be. He slots into the lineup with like a little bit less pressure for the 22-year-old. But yeah, like there are still things, even though I just said they're a top 10 offense, that is relying on bounce backs and guys getting better. Like Brett Beatty, we love him on this podcast, but in his 400 major league at-bats, he's been bad. And granted, he finished spring strong. He has looked good. We have all the faith in the world on him, in him. And again, maybe it's our fault for overhyping guys, but he does have to play better. Like it's been a black hole at third base for the last couple seasons. That's the problem. I think that's the real problem right now with this lineup. Harrison Bader, we knew, is not going to hit at, like at all, pretty much. Anything that we get out of him is a bonus because he plays such elite center field. But right now, we are in a world where I don't know what Starling Marte does for this team to a point where, like, come May, if he's hitting 210 and he looks terrible, like, how much longer does he stay on the roster, realistically?
He'll stay on the roster because I don't know how much more dead money we're going to eat. We're finally getting out of all the dead money, and we're just going to do it again right now, where it's like, at some point, you might just have to humble him and be like, hey, now like you're Tyrone Taylor, and Tyrone Taylor's you. Or you're Trace Thompson, and Drew Gilbert is you. Like, because if Drew Gilbert comes out and he hits for 6 weeks, he rips apart AAA with all his college experience, as good as he was last year, and everything he can bring this team, and like as an engine in that lower part of the order, it's like it'll be hard to keep him off the field. If you look at Starling Marte and you look at Drew Gilbert, and you're like, okay, this one guy is better hitter, he plays better defense, he tries harder. It's going to be hard to say, no, I'm going to play the other guy who does all those things worse like that. But we're not there yet. We want to get there. I quickly want to call to attention two things that have been happening this week from Mets Twitter. That one, our boy Jordan hit me up. He's a huge baseball nerd. He loves bats.
Yes.
And he sent me a DM about a week ago, and he said, I'm nerding out a bit, but Jeff was using a Proxer knob bat versus node knob bat. The Proxer typically increases bat speed, creates more whip through the zone versus usual node knob, which is known for being great for bat control. It could just be a one-off at-bat spring training experiment, but there's probably a deeper adjustment he's making up in general. He choked up a crap ton last year since he was using the 35-32, so he had a bigger barrel. I'm going to try to find the size of this one. And I said, please give me more bat analysis whenever you have it. And then
out the DMs and hit up Jeff and be like, did you change your bat? You doing something different?
Yeah, hit him up about the Proxer bat. Then he hit me up yesterday, Jordan, and was like, update, now Jeff is swinging a bat with a puck knob. So knob watch on Jeff McNeil. But it's clear that Jeff McNeil seems like he's making adjustments to knob watch.
Can't say that.
Yeah, we can say anything we want.
Our UK viewers know what knob watch means.
Yeah, that's true. That's our second most popular country, which is awesome. We're always a top 10 podcast in UK. So shout out UK listeners right there. We love you guys. Shout out you too, Darren, especially. But I guess Rosie too. Maybe she's tuning in once in a while, just not telling me. But
shout out Rosie.
Shout out Rosie. It sounds like Jeff might be making a conscious adjustment here to, I want to hit the ball harder, which is a good thing for Jeff, because he can control almost any single bat. Like, that's his thing. But if he hits the ball harder, and he's had a couple more hard hit balls this spring. And then second one, it was in the Mets Twitter community. It was on Mets Reddit. Yeah, Alvarez for life. Standing ovation for Brett Beatty on opening day. Some Mets fans were poo-pooing it. I'm going to be there on opening day. If anyone's going to be there opening day, hit me up. Let us know. What?
Who's poo-pooing it? Why would you poo?
People poo-pooing it left and right. That's cringe. That's not right. He's never done anything to deserve it.
Fucking assholes. Who? This guy plays for the team that you root for. Why do you not? Everybody should get an ovation on standing. A standing ovation on opening day. That was bad English. I was getting so excited because I want to yell at people. I haven't gotten a chance to yell at people in a while, and I've got a lot to yell about today. But why would you not want to give the kid a standing ovation? He hasn't done anything. He's 24. He hasn't had the opportunity. He had 400 at-bats. He said, this kid fucking sucks. Fuck him. I'm not going to stand for this loser. What is wrong with you? Why would you not want to give him the best environment to succeed? Did you not see those fucking asshole Philly fans stand and cheer for Trey Turner and see what it did for him? You think you're better than those pieces of garbage down there in the asshole of New Jersey? I mean, come on. Like, what are we doing?
Even Lindor made a comment that, like, yeah, sometimes it definitely wears on us as a team when we get booed in our home ballpark. Like, it feels really good to be cheered for. I'm very excited to just cheer my balls off for Brett Beatty on opening day, because he's a big part of this team, and we need him to be good. Brett Beatty being good not only changes the outlook of the team in April and May and June, but it will change the outlook of this team in 2025, 2026, 2027, because behind Brett Beatty, that's it. He's the third baseman. That's why he's getting his second chances, because for a couple of years, they were like, he's going to be our third baseman. And looking forward, there's not another option coming up here. There's no real prospect to push him. We've seen now what this organization thinks of Mark Vientos, and it might be less than a lot of you guys think of him, but it's not very highly. So it's just, this is it. So without Brett Beatty now, a big chunk of the spending money in the next couple of years has to go to someone who can play third base. You know where I want that money to go? Juan Soto, Pete Alonso, Corbin Burns. things that are much more fun and much more exciting rather than like Alex Bregman is going to hit 20 home runs for $28 million. Brett Beatty being good is so important. And if as fans, if we even think that we have like a 3% chance, a 1% chance to impact that, you know how cool that would be? We can make Brett Beatty good. We can have, that's pride. I want to make Brett Beatty good. And that this is a Brett Beatty podcast, has been forever and always. Shout out Brett Beatty. And we're going to continue to support him. But that is, I think him and Alvarez specifically are the, those are the guys. If those guys, and I guess Edwin Diaz, because he just has to be back and be himself and be everything we think he hope and dream, everything he looks like. But getting huge contributions from Beatty and Alvarez. And again, like a good step for Beatty is like 100 WRC plus guy and not making average. A ton of errors. Like being Alec Boehm for Brett Beatty makes this team like hell yes.
But look what being Alec Boehm did for the Phillies. He went from being dog shit to being okay, and they were like, we could win the World Series. I'm not saying the Mets are there, but the Phillies, that's what changed.
Yeah, we probably need Wheeler and Nola for that to happen, but I like where your head's at. Yes. Totally, yes. Right, yeah. right on the money there. But like if Beatty becomes like a 110, 115 WRC plus guy, 25 home runs, if Alvarez hits 35 home runs with a 350 on base percentage, we suddenly now, it's two positions. You know what we can say, Mets fans? You don't have to think about them forever, basically. Never have to think about those
until 2030.
Literally, that's it. Now we have two guys who are free and good and fun and likable and awesome. And again, Alvarez right now is significantly ahead of Beatty. He is Lisan Al-Ghaib. He is different. Like he is built, he is cut from a different cloth. He could do things that nobody else can on the baseball field. But those steps, and even the moderate steps, league average for Beatty, 320 on base percentage from Alvarez. That's what we're shooting for. That's what projections have them at. That's the 50th percentile outcome. We do that. Everything for this team changes again, not just this year, but next year, the year after that, the year after that, the year after that, compounds and keeps getting better.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I'm, like I said earlier, I'm cautiously optimistic about this team, and we've said it on every single episode. Going to be a lot of fun Mets baseball. If you love baseball, this is going to be a baseball season. And these are the little things that you'll be able to watch on a day-to-day basis. See Brett Beatty hopefully grow and get better as a player. See Francisco Alvarez turn into maybe one of the more elite power hitters in Major League Baseball. Maybe we see Tyler McGill take that step forward. Maybe Christian Scott, Mike Vassell, Jose Budo, they come up and they make an impact. Like these are the things that, while is not what a World Series contender is necessarily looking for, like when you look at the Braves or the Dodgers, they're not like, man, I really hope our young players are okay. But like for a team like the Mets that is on the fringe, that is the difference between being a fringe team and being a playoff team for them right now. And that's the kind of stuff that we need to happen. And if you're a Mets fan at home, fucking cheer for the team. Please, please cheer for these kids. There's no reason. If they dog it, if they don't give a shit, that's different. But they're busting their ass every single day. And we did have the unique experience of being inside the organization for a couple years and seeing it firsthand. And I can promise you, there is nobody who doesn't care. Everybody from the top down cares about winning, cares about playing well. And especially these young guys like Brett Beatty and Francisco Alvarez, I think it means a lot to them to, I mean, this is their career. This is a make or break year for Brett Beatty. He wants to be a Major League Baseball player. Show it. And I hope we can see that.
Yeah, Will Salmon had a good piece on The Athletic on Tuesday about that. He's very aware he's getting a second chance just because there's almost no replacement for him. It's just like, I have to be better. He believes he'll be better. And it does a lot of this start with confidence. We talk about like Brett Beatty, just seemed like it was a snowball last year. It seemed like the bad defense went back into the box with his bad offense, and the bad box went back in the field with his bad defense. Probably seemed like he wasn't supported very well by his coaches. He wasn't being positioned well. He didn't have a great approach to the plate, and everything just kind of went out of control as the team spiraled, and that was it. But apart from those guys, then the other things that I think could like really catapult this team, be like the meteor that takes this team to the playoffs. Like, and it's all things that aren't that crazy if they happen. Like, what if Luis Severino throws 150 innings? He's been so good this spring. He's been so good. Awesome. He's throwing 98. So good. The new changeup is incredible. The slider's still awesome. He's mixing in sinkers because the fastball shape isn't like as elite as it once was, but still pretty good. So it's like, these are weapons against lefties, which was his big struggle last year. Like that. It'd be like, I'm not, it's so weird that I'm in a world right now where I'm not even worried about the effectiveness of Luis Severino, but it's the health. That's exactly what David Stern said like 3 months ago when we signed, 4 months ago now, where David Stern's like says these things, and we should probably all listen to him a little more. It seems like he speaks a lot of truth, and he's very contrite. He's very articulate, and he's very exact in the way he speaks about this team and all this stuff. He was like, yeah, we love Severino's stuff. It's just a matter of health. And right now he's healthy, and we think we can keep him healthy. A, B, C, D, bang. Now we're at opening day. And as of right now, as of recording, he still definitely is. So let's just keep that thing going. What if again, all these bullpen pieces that we've been just championing this offseason? Like, what if when Fujinami comes back, it's all ready to go? Brooks Raley, another good year. What if these things happen? What if Jorge Lopez gets even 70% of his form from 2 years ago? Like, if some of these guys click, if some of these good things happen, like, maybe you don't want to hear this, fifth year Drew Smith. What if there's just a little step? Like, what if he just throws the fastballs and it's not?
Drew's our boy. I want to hear it.
Drew. Yeah, I'm talking about the other people. All the other people listening. The all the people in the interwebs. But like, they just some of these guys just a little bit of pop in that bullpen. From this bullpen going from one that we're like, all right, it's probably one of the bottom third bullpens in the league that's being held up by the best closer in baseball. What if it just becomes the 12th best bullpen in baseball, baby? That's all we want. 12th best, 6th best in the National League, 7th best in the National League, and we're storming towards the postseason. Maybe not storming, but we are drifting into a wild card spot.
Yeah, I like to temper expectations, and like when people ask me, like, you think the Mets are making the playoffs this year? Even in my like season predictions video, I said no. But we've been too high. We've been too excited. Like, I want to be surprised this year. I would love to be wrong about the Mets not making the playoffs. And right now, the projections do say that they're not going to make the playoffs with that 81 wins. But as we're telling you right now, they're so close. And those few things that could go right here, there, everywhere, whatever it's going to be. Even some of the young guys that we've mentioned that could come up. Like, we've talked a lot about the guys who are on the roster right now. But even looking back, like, at the minor league depth, the Mets haven't had minor league depth like they have right now in what? 20 years? I mean, ever in our lifetime? I was talking with my dad about it. And shout out Stanley Consuegra. Now, granted, he's not going to make the majors this year. He's a far away thing away. But my dad's like, watching the end of these spring training games towards the end of the season, like, you've been used to the Mets having like these like lifelong minor league, for lack of a better term, bums that are like 33 years old, being like getting their last chance, getting a couple at-bats. But now you're seeing the Mets are like Ryan Clifford, Alex Ramirez, Drew Gilbert, Jet Williams. Like, these are the guys who are now getting the opportunities. They have real depth, and especially on the pitching side, there's a lot of depth there. But back to Stanley Consuegra, some guy you've never heard of, hit the second hardest ball in all of spring training.
The whole thing.
Pretty fucking sick. Pretty fucking sick for, like, a guy who's now officially on the radar.
Even, like, totally opposite of what you said, but in the same ilk. Like, even the boring 30 or something year old guys we have at AAA now are better than they've been before. G-Man Choi took his outright assignment. That's a Major League Baseball player. Jose Iglesias took his outright assignment. That's a Major League Baseball player. Trace Thompson's down there. There's Zach Short made the team, but like, even Vientos down there. Like, oh my God, someone just bumped, twisted an ankle. Mark Vientos can come up and hit you a home run when he runs into one. He can. And again, same with that pitching. Like, it's Lucchese's down there. He's going to get innings this year. Vassell Hamill, Christian Scott are all guys who have over 150 innings in the 100 or at least 120 innings in the upper minors, and they all seem like they can pitch in a Major League Baseball game today, tomorrow, or the next day if you need them to. This might be the first time in literally our lives that the Mets AAA team is over 500, besides maybe 2012 when they had like Wheeler and Harvey on that team together, where it's like, okay, these guys can actually play a little bit. But it's a real thing that we've never experienced, and that's kind of boring shit that you guys are probably like, this isn't super exciting. But that's a lot of times the difference between the teams that go far and the teams that do not. Like, the fact that last year the Rangers, a team that is a weird case because it was so much happened developmentally and so much happened with them in free agency. But if you look at that team and you probably ask some of the guys in the locker room, like, how do we make the World Series? They're like, man, Dane Dunning gave us 170 clean innings. And we thought he was such an afterthought in the offseason. A guy they traded for who was bad from the White Sox and he was bad with the Rangers. And he developed a new pitch and a color and a two-seamer. And he got his game planning right. And suddenly, like, he's pitching every fifth day for them. Like, things like that have to happen. It's a war of attrition in Major League Baseball. 162 games. So many people are going to play in this team, and we're going to do a little draft towards the end of this episode. Me and Mark and I are going to pick five guys each, and the only things they're going to be scored on are plate appearances and innings pitched. Guys not in the 26-man roster on opening day, and then we're going to figure out something for the winner and loser at the end of the year. But it's just like, that's something that this team has not had in a while, and it's cool that we have that. But now we got to talk about the other stuff. What could ruin this team? What's going to make this team win 74 games, 73 games? Because we talked about the positive. We got to talk about the negative, because this team is definitely not without flaws. This team is not without a low floor. Like, things can probably go wrong for this team. I think the number one thing that would murder this team is if Kodai Senga has to get the full-on rotator cuff surgery. If he does not come back this season and misses part of the next year, that would be a knife in my chest. That would send me into a death spiral, truthfully.
Yeah. Outside of like any like major injury, which like you can't
can always
that,
happen.
That's any team. You talk about with any team, like, oh, if Aaron Judge breaks his leg, the Yankees are screwed. Yeah, of course. Like, you would be too if that was your team. So it's, I mean, like,
ask Buck Showalter, talk, what if Francisco Lindor breaks his leg?
That was his favorite comment that he told us last year that got cut from the interview. But yeah, like, if Senga, in terms of things that are like actually around right now, if Senga's arm is dead or whatever's going on there, not making the playoffs. It's probably not possible without him. And that would be a killer. There's no inclination that that's the case by any means. But as more and more days go on and we have no information, I can't pretend like I'm not a little bit worried. Like, it definitely scares me that a guy who's so vital to this team, we don't really know much about what's going on.
especially for the severity of what this injury could be. Like, if he has to get rotator cuff surgery, like, I don't know, there's like about a 25% chance. We just saw the only good season he's ever going to pitch in his major league career. Like, yeah. This is what Sixto Sanchez had, and he missed 5 years. Granted, different situation, but it's just like, he's just coming back now as a chubby reliever, where he was like a top prospect in 2019. But it's just...
Rookie of the year, bad. Dark horse.
Yeah, there he is. Watch him, 20 saves for the Marlins. Check it out in your deep fantasy leagues. But it's just that it's on the table. And it was something that was a concern when the Mets signed him. That's why he was so cheap. People are like, can't believe he's $15 million. Yeah, it's because there's provisions in his contract for elbow injuries. Like, he's been nicked up before. And it's a weird thing. Like, it's not really being talked about right now, because as Kode might begin rehabbing soon and throwing, the Mets have a clear incentive for him not to pitch as long as possible this year, because he needs 140, it was, or 160 innings, whatever this. He needed 400 innings in 3 seasons to have an opt-out after the 3rd year of his contract. So if he doesn't reach 400 innings in 3 seasons, suddenly the Mets just signed Kodai Senga to a 2-year, $30 million extension. That is a really good reason to keep a guy. You know, make sure you're good. Make sure you're good. June 1st, July, All-Star break. Just come back for the All-Star break. Get you 80 innings this year, then we'll be okay. But there's a... Oh, it was 240 innings. That's what it was. It was 160 last year. Yes. He's 240 more for the option to for the opt-out to kick. That's a real reason for the Mets to be like, this isn't that special of a team. But maybe just this year, 80 innings, take it easy a little bit. But again, all that probably is still to avoid the worst, which would be full-on rotator cuff surgery. It would be horrible.
Yeah, I don't think that there's necessarily this grand conspiracy of like the Mets being cheap and being like, we need to limit his innings. But that's definitely something that is real and is thought about probably at some point.
Briefly, do want to say that the Mets officially released Phil Bickford today. I think that was the roster move for JD Martinez officially for the 40-man roster. And the Mets did, pour one out for Phil Bickford. Gamba never forgotten. Same with Luke Voit, got cut. Goodbye, our fallen
best
king.
Easy king.
Our bicep king. But the Mets pulled the same bullshit that the Giants pulled with JD Davis on Phil Bickford, where he won his arbitration case for $900,000 and he's walking out with a league minimum money. So that's like, it's different because the Giants cut JD Martinez, where JD Martinez, JD Davis, where the Giants cut JD Davis, where JD Davis should be on that roster. He's better than other people on that roster, where Phil Bickford is worse and has performed worse. So I don't hold it as much against the Mets, but sucks that the guy wins an arbitration case, but the contract's not guaranteed because it's an arbitration victory, not a defeat. And players' unions can have to answer this, but it's just that was a weird thing. I noticed. Again, I don't think it's the Mets' fault. He won the arbitration case, but he was always on the razor's edge of this roster. But the fact that it does happen is like, it's kind of crummy.
Yeah, super shitty. There's no doubt about that. He's gonna get picked up by someone else though, so he'll get paid by somebody else. Like, it's not the end of the world. He'll still be okay. Philly B for three times.
Bickford will never die.
Never. Phil Bickford will never die. Never gonna happen. But yeah, like, some of the other stuff too that could definitely derail the season a little bit too. The young guys that we mentioned being good. If Alvarez stays the same, if Brett Beatty stays the same, that's gonna hurt, because then that becomes. Yeah. I won't say the catching will become a hole, because he's still going to give us 20 home runs, I think, in his worst. And that's way better than we've had in a long time. Totally. But it will be very, very hard for Brett Beatty to be a black hole at third base offensively, especially with a guy like Harrison Bader in the lineup, who we expect little to nothing out of. And if Starling Marte is not good, which seems like a real possibility.
Yeah, and also if something doesn't click back with Jeff, I think it will, because Jeff has always has this, like, he's like this, he's this pendulum that swings back and forth, and he plays baseball like
even
not
year.
Many other. What? Yeah, big year, even year, but very different than most other people play baseball, even in the last like 20 years of baseball in general. And I love Jeff McNeil to death. I'm happy he's like one of, I think, the 7 guys under contract on this team for 2025 right now, which is really hilarious to say out loud. But it's just, there needs to be, again, of those 4 guys, 2 people basically have to take a step. 2 people have to get to like a 340 on base percentage, like the number I'll give for those guys. And then like, then you're cooking. But if only one of them or none of them get to that point, suddenly this order is not very long, not as long as Mark would like it. And then now you're kind of in trouble after you get past JD Martinez.
Yeah, we know I like it long. the other, I think, major elephant in the room to talk about is, and you kind of hinted at it a little bit with 7 guys under contract for 2025, is if the Mets are in that no man's land and not playing particularly great baseball, there's the real possibility that you start to trade off some pieces. And one of those pieces would be Pete Alonso. You have to assume he'd be someone that is considered. I think Jeff McNeil is also someone that would be considered as that you'd be trading off. You trade off every single starting pitcher and bullpen arm that you could possibly get rid of as well. That would completely derail the season too, is if they limp into that trade deadline and don't look kind of like they did last year. Like, if you go hot into the trade deadline and you're like, oh, this team's starting to pick it up, Kodai Senga's back, this is what they've been missing, I don't think they do that. But if you limp into it like they did last year, are they really a playoff team? Can they finish the second half of the season 10 games above 500? That's something that I think the Mets, and we've now seen with proof of last year, they're not afraid to go ahead and make the moves to continue moving forward rather than attempting a Hail Mary shot.
Even the opposite, it's a shitty reality, but we've seen teams that are in within playoff reach for the last few years still sell because it doesn't fit the front office's plan of attack. I don't think the Mets would do this. I think the JD Martinez signing is a signal that that likely will not happen unless things are like quite bad. Like, I think if we're in no man's land, we might just not buy, but I don't think we sell hard. We might sell something if something really good comes to the table. But 2 years ago, a guy on this team, like, we saw the Orioles, who were in opportunity to get a playoff spot for the first time in a decade since the ghost of Buck Showalter left their dugout, trade their closer. At the time, it was their closer because it was before the Felix Bautista awakening. And again, it's ironic because that did happen. And same with Trey Mancini, who was like an organizational hero. Since Trey Mancini left the Baltimore Orioles, he has like a 500 OPS. And that Jorge Lopez trade netted the Orioles Yennier Cano, who's now become one of the 5-10 best relievers in all of baseball. So things that'll be a real stress test for what this Mets fan base and a conglomerate think of David Stearns, because we've seen moves like that work out for teams. We've seen moves like that not work out for teams. A couple of years ago, remember when the Red Sox pulled Tommy Pham for no reason, when Chaim Bloom was really nervous about his job? But it's just there's this weird no man's land the Mets are probably going to exist most of the season in, and we just haven't been with David Stearns enough yet where we know what he's going to do. When he was with the Brewers in no man's land, there was a different budget, but a couple years ago he traded Josh Hader, which that did not go over well in Milwaukee. That kind of seemed like it was the beginning of the end for an era of prominence for the Milwaukee Brewers, but we just don't know. We haven't seen him do it yet. We haven't seen him try, but I don't know. If we dump Severino because he's pitching decent at the deadline, that just gives Mike Vassell, Jose Budo, or Christian Scott like full runway for a second half. Like that might just be a net neutral, and we might have got a prospect out of it. But if we trade Pete Alonso, I might throw a chair. Like, I don't know. There's something in between that where it's like I don't know what's gonna happen. It's like definitely like it's like 5% of anxiety, but it's like totally overwhelmed by the excitement of opening day. It's just something that we haven't gone through a season with this person leading baseball operations yet, so we don't exactly know how he's going to act.
No, we don't know. And we know that he will do what he considers to be the best move for the organization moving forward, because you know what? He's not going anywhere. I don't think this is going to be a quick BBW situation where a couple years and, shocking, an agent is not a good general manager to lead an organization. Who saw that coming? We can all agree, right, that they only hired Brody to try and get a good deal on his clients, right? That was the only reason.
No, it's because the one client was Jacob DeGrom. I think we all know that pretty officially. Yeah. And no, it's also, I think that's probably 60% of it, but the other 40% is the fact that the Wilpons were, for lack of a better term, stupid. And some guy with slick hair and like the gift of gab walks in. It was like a hot shot with a nice suit. Yeah, and like, you say what you want, say what you will about Brody Van Wagenen. Like, we've been in a room with him before. The guy commands a room. Like, he's a big guy. He's always got the suits on with the sneakers with the white bottoms. He's a handsome cat. He's got that gel in the hair. Like, he'll command a room. And like, that's probably a cool moment to signal the end of old baseball, where it's like, it's like kind of like politics, where it's like, if you're a tall, handsome dude, you could kind of do anything you want in the entire world. Where it's like, now you might need an Ivy League degree, which is a good thing for sure. But it's just like, if I say the three right words to the right rich asshole, like, I can suddenly have any job I want.
Totally. And I'm glad we're past it. I'm glad we have the Harvard man who was, what was it? His mind was poisoned by those people up in Boston and at Harvard to trick him into trying to ruin the Mets.
New York.
I believe that's what the post said. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is probably true, but almost definitely not. But almost now we talked about, I think we basically mentioned every guy on the roster besides maybe a reliever or two, but I think, and Omar Narvaez. So just shout out Omar Narvaez. Get that mentioned in for the episode.
Shout out Omar.
Shout out Omar Narvaez.
Shout out Tommy Pham.
Lefty, I mean, bring him in. What are we waiting for? What are we waiting for in Tommy Pham?
Hold on. Okay. I want to throw this out there. Who will have a higher OPS this season, Tommy Pham or Starling Marte?
As if Tommy Pham gets a job, it's not even a question. It's Tommy Pham. I think it's maybe 4 out of 5 Tommy Pham higher OPS than Starling Marte. Someone check me on that. But next thing here I want to talk about. I want you to give a bold prediction for the Mets season. It could be record. It could be performance. It could be something that somebody does. But I want something bold. I want something we're going to put on social media.
Wow, something bold. All right. I mean, like, is Pete? I'm not going to pick this one. But is Pete hitting 50 home runs? Is that bold? Is that count as a bold prediction?
Yes, that's bold.
That would be a bold prediction. I just want to get my head in the space of what a bold prediction would be. I'm going to go with that the Mets. I know what it's going to be. Mets score the most runs in the National League.
What the fuck?
Bold prediction. I'm going crazy.
That might be a little too bold. I don't think there's no chance of that happening. But
let's try it.
Yeah, I was going to say something much more chill. Mine was going to be that Luis Severino throws 150 innings with a 3.5 ERA. That was my bold.
Boo! That's not that bold. Boo! That can happen. Bold. Okay, fine. I'll give you a real bold one then, if you want a real bold one then. This is actually what I think happens. I think Brandon Nimmo finishes in the top 10 of MVP votes this season.
That's bold. That's good. That's bold. All right, let me think of another one then.
You do a crazy one now. Do a crazy one, because I did a crazy one, and then I came back to James' world. Now go to Mark world.
Now it's going to seem like, because you gave me the idea from exactly what you just said, but Cisco Alvarez gets an MVP vote.
Oh, okay. I like it. I'll take it. That's good.
Not top 10 in MVP vote. Top 25 MVP. Yeah. On this baseball reference, you see MVP 23 right there.
You cannot talk to our friend Tim Healy and tell him to just write him in for one at the end of it. At the end of the season, that doesn't count if you're right. All right. Tim Healy's the one who wrote him in. We know you had a little bit of cahoots.
Okay, I'll do a little bit of goods. I'll do one more then. And maybe this is me showing my hand a little bit for the prospect draft we're gonna have later. Drew Gilbert, 300 plate appearances, the major league team.
Ooh, that is bold. A bold one. I like that one as well. Okay, so we got some clips now from TikTok and social media and everything. So got the bold predictions out there. What else we got to talk about here before we just kind of do our own stuff and talk about a little bit of some good gambling picks? We did this a few years ago. It went well.
Yeah. Briefly, I want to talk about the David Stearns comments. We were just talking about Stearns. Would have made more sense. But just the fact that it was like a joke about what we were talking about last week, that dude on Reddit thinks he's like not really he's not really a Mets fan. I want to find the exact quote. He was talking about how badly he wants to win with this team. Being like, I've rooted for this team my whole life. I've lived this team, I've died with this team, and I've never seen a championship. And a lot of people my age have also never seen a championship. And he's like, I want to be the one to bring it here. Like, I want to create something that happens. And like, that got me going a little bit. Like, I got pretty excited where I was just like, I want to see this shit too, David. Like, I'm also, I mean, we're not that different age of David Stearns, which is kind of fucked up to think about, but we want to do that. We really want to do that. And specifically shout out David Stearns for the JD Martinez contract. Huge shout out to David and Steve. It's a huge message to the guys in the clubhouse, which is what I was alluding to before, but it's just the fact that these guys want this shit. Like, there are people in this clubhouse locker room and front office right now who really want this. Like, I think a lot of baseball executives, and this was like a big part of Moneyball, the movie, are just like, have to be a little bit detached from their team, because you have to sign these guys, cut these guys, trade these guys, send these guys down, move them, you have to do everything to these guys. You almost have to treat them like just assets rather than people. But he wants this shit bad, and we all want this really badly too. And maybe it doesn't happen 2024, but like, there's a clear plan and there's process that's being put in place where I'm as confident about the Mets team as I've have been for at least a decade, if not longer.
I got a hot take about Pete's comments. Ready for this?
Yeah.
I think Pete's showing his hand a little bit. I think Pete wants to stay here, and I think the Mets signing JD Martinez for Pete goes, oh, like, we're gonna be good. They're not gonna trade me at the deadline because we got good players now. We're trying to win. That means I'm gonna stay here. I think Pete's like, how can I please, for the love of God, how do I stay in New York City as long as possible? I don't want to go to fucking Cincinnati or wherever he would get shipped off to.
It would be Anaheim. The only option would be Anaheim. But
that's true.
I don't think that's untrue. And like, depending how this year goes, we've toyed around with the idea of having like predicting the 2025 Mets opening day roster episode. If the team's good, we probably won't get to that point. But if the team's bad, we definitely will get to that point. So you guys be on the lookout for that. But there's so much fluidity with this roster right now. There's so many things that can happen. There's so few guys under contract. The way that Stearns has built this team intentionally this year is that you can move in any direction at any moment you want. There are almost no long-term commitments that he's specifically assigned. And it's just that whatever happens next kind of has a lot to do with what happens now. Like, I think there's a general 5-year plan put in place, but I think this is someone who's flexible, who will take things other people say to heart, and that things will and can change depending on how this team performs this year, especially the young players. And that's going to be, this year's going to be about Drew Gilbert. It's going to be about Christian Scott. It's going to be about Mike Vassell, Dom Hamill, Jose Budo, somewhat still not young anymore, but still guys who are arbitration eligible. Tyler McGill, David Peterson, possibly Jet Williams, possibly Luis Angel Acuna. All of this shit is in play right now, and I think it's really relevant to the future of this team.
Listen, we know David Stearns listens to this podcast. David, if you're listening to this current episode, I'm sure you are, as you always are for every episode, because you've seemingly done and agreed with us on almost everything that we ever say on here. But maybe the next time you talk to the press, you sneak in like, oh, I had a great papaya for lunch or for breakfast, whatever it is. If you throw that into conversation, that'll be our little nod that you know we're listening, that you're listening to the Best Stuff podcast. That being said, you probably should turn it off now, David, because we're going to talk about a little bit of gambling, and we know you can't do that. So I went out and I found some player props, some futures again from an unnamed sports book until they pay us. There's not that many for the Mets because there's just not that many players that you can really figure out how much they're going to play. But the big names are all involved, and here are some of my favorites that I like. In terms of crazy bets, I really like Nimmo as the runs leader at plus 5,000. If he has a 360, 370 on base with Lindor, Pete, and JD Martinez hitting behind him, plus 5,000, sprinkle $10 on there, win 500. That, to me, feels like a really, really fun bet that you could, like, not really sweat over.
Oh, very honestly, I'm responsibly going to bet that after this episode. That's an amazing one. That's up there with my, Logan Gilbert lead the league and win 75-1 bet. That's my favorite bet I've ever placed in my life. If it doesn't win, I'm addicted to that, to talking about that bet. But otherwise, I think my favorite one on the board, just because of attrition, is probably Edwin Diaz to lead the league in saves. The way that we're seeing closers drop like flies, your boy Paul Sewald's injured, Joan Duran's injured, someone else got injured to close this weekend. But Josh
Devin Williams broke his back.
Yeah, Devin Williams broke his back. David Bednar's dealing with a back. He's healthy for opening day. Just most of the upper echelon of closers in baseball are not healthy to start the year, which has sent fantasy baseball drafts into a pure tizzy. And also the other guys on Edwin's level, I think you would say Josh Hader, who I feel like the Astros have so many options that they're probably just not going to use him as a traditional closer. I'm sure he's there to buy in. And the fact that they have Ryan Pressly and Brian Abreu, who are, along with Josh Hader, three of, I think, the 10 best relievers in all of baseball. Like, there just might be some ninth innings that he pitches the eighth instead of the ninth because those two are righties and he's a lefty and you might just need to get a tough lefty out. But Edwin is the closer right now who is, like, the most obvious to save every game because the Mets don't have a very good next option in terms of closing. They find relievers. They have no one else even in his stratosphere to take a ninth inning from him, depending on the way game works out. And again, this team's going to be in a lot of close games. We're going to play good defense. We're going to get some timely hits. We're going to pitch reasonably well, I hope, most of the time. Like, that's someone who... Do you remember if those Edwin odds were the top in the league for the most saves?
No, that was third, I believe. I believe Clase and Hader were ahead of him, okay. And then I think he was third.
Yeah, so again, I think that he's going to just have more save opportunities than those guys because Clase, that team with the Guardians, shout out James Dolan's cousin. Wow, what a disgrace that they'll never spend a cent because of what a good core they always have and have again. Chase DeLauder in the minor leagues. He was like the best hitter in spring training. Good. So they can have Estevan Floreal on their opening day roster. It's just disgusting. But some of the way these teams, these people run these organizations. Thank God, again, we have an owner general manager who the week before the season, when the team has middling expectations, they're like, let's bring in an impact bat. Grateful for that, Mets fans. But otherwise, just it's a lot of over-unders for our stars. I think that those over-under bets are like scary to bet because you're basically just betting on people's health. But in terms of the numbers, they all look relatively docile.
Yeah, like Alvarez's 22.5 home runs. Fully expect him to hit more than that. Like, I'm an over guy on that. Francisco Lindor, 27.5 home runs. I actually think that this might be the best line just because, like, hitting 30 home runs is a lot. And I don't really, I'm not like, Lindor has to hit 30 home runs. Oh, if he hit 27 and did the exact same thing as he did last year, sign me up. Gonna be a great season. That one feels tough. But then you have Pete at 42.5 home runs. I think he should be over as long as he's healthy and he, you know, continues to do what he does. These are the ones I like here. I like the RBI stuff. Pete said RBI leader for the MLB, 850. And we mentioned that right now at the top of the order, the Mets do have two guys who get on base at a very high clip with Brandon Nimmo and Francisco Lindor. I really like that one as well at plus 850. He's like kind of like in that top five, top 10 range, I believe, in terms of other MLB players. And to be fair, a lot of the other guys at the top, they have a lot of guys to spread around with. Like the Braves, there's only so many RBIs that Braves lineup can have because they have seven guys who are going to drive everybody in. Matt Olson's going to take away from Austin Riley, who takes away from Ronald Acuna, the Dodgers. Like these lineups are loaded differently than the Mets lineup is.
Last year, the Mets, again, objectively had a very bad season, and Pete objectively had probably the worst year of his career, and he was second all of baseball in RBIs.
There it is.
That's what I'm saying. I think the year before he was also second, but behind Aaron Judge. Like we're just, and again, like he's in a contract year, guys. He's gonna want to play every single day, and now he's gonna be in the three hole. So, like we talked about, more opportunities for guys to be on base ahead of him. That's it. There's every first inning is coming up. That's big time. He's gonna have more at bats, more opportunities. I think, and I like that one a lot too. It's just Olsen with Acuna is the horrifying one, and also just I think any Astro, but why not? Maybe Judge with Juan Soto and Gleyber Torres ahead of him, but he'll get hurt. He's already hurt. Like, something will happen to Aaron Judge. I don't, Nick Castellanos was eighth in the league in RBIs last year. What the hell?
How'd that even happen? He had a horrible year. He had a horrible year, too. He wasn't even good.
He's also having a horrible spring. Terrible. But it's weird. Like, again, but yeah, otherwise it's hard. It's hard to bet these full season over-unders. But if I had to do it, I'd like doing these ones where, like, to lead the league so I can bet a little less but get the juice back. So that Nimmo runs, that's sexual. And the PRBI, I think, is also fun. Pete and Edwin, because I think those two guys probably should have first or second best odds, but they probably have something, like you said, Edwin 3 and Pete, like, 4 or 5. That's value. Yeah,
no, those are definitely good ones. And then you got Mets 81.5 wins. That's the one that's like, God damn it. I'm taking the over because we're Mets fans. But, oh, man, what a good line that was. They don't even give us 81 wins as a win. That's a loss. That's a killer.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's also funny. I think these sports books get sharper and sharper as they get more and more embedded in society. Shout out Shohei. Shout out Jonte Porter. and like this, the fact that the Mets win total is exactly basically what Baseball Prospectus and Fangraphs has us at. It's kind of a funny. It's almost a nod to them that Vegas is like, we got football and basketball. Baseball, you nerds have this shit so covered. And the nerds in baseball have it so covered. It's the absolute best thing in the world. But my favorite one on the board, like you said, the crazy one, Nimmo runs leader. But then the Pete, 108.5 RBIs, if you want to play something safe. Like, just drop two units to get one back in October, get ready for football season. Like, that's I think, is the way to play that.
I like that. Get ready for football season. Drop two, get one back.
that's what I'm saying, because that's what you would do right now. Because, like, if you make a full season bet like this, you're getting this back week 3, week 4, week 5 of the NFL season. Like, that's going right into your bankroll for football. So that's kind of what you're doing. I almost use future sometimes with gambling responsibly as a way to, like, have my gambling CD, my gambling mutual fund, where I'm just like, I'm going to put like $20 into this future. I'm really confident it has like even odds. Like, I did this with Lindor last year. I'm like, he's going to get this hit number. And I sweated it through the whole last 2 weeks of the year. And I did it 2 years ago with Chris Kreider under in total goals. I remember when I made that bet. That was a different time. That's kind of sad to talk about now. But just like put a little bit down, then like, oh, you get a little gift in your account. Like when everything comes back.
Texas Rangers win the World Series. Boy, smacked that one.
Last year, I had the Nuggets win the championship. I've been good with futures. I'm confident in my baseball futures this year. But a lot of fun stuff from the Mets. We've got a lot of stars in the middle of this lineup. Now, quickly, a few minutes. I want to do with you 5 guys each. Play the appearances and innings pitched for this team. We're going to keep track of this year. And I want to talk about, we said we're going to do a home run derby pool with the guys. Fantrax kind of dicked me. I still love Fantrax as an account, but I was unclear of the way that rules were made. I probably need to talk to a developer ahead of time to get like a sponsored league. Try to do something like that next year. We got our boy Nick Kowal right now working on a Google sheet that'll be much smaller because I'll have to do this by hand. So we'll probably only let like 50, maybe 100 people in it. But look out for a link either Tuesday or Wednesday or Thursday morning if Nick can set me up with a VLOOKUP in time. But otherwise, we're just going to do this if you guys stay engaged, because Mets have a lot of players in minor leagues that we're excited about who are going to get chances this year. And Mark and I are going to take 5 each right now quickly. So I thought of it. So I'll give you the first pick.
Wow, you're going to give me the first pick in terms of players. I'm just going to steal the guy that you think is going to get 300. Wait. Does JD Martinez count?
He counts, but I think that would be foul play, if I'm going to be honest with you.
Okay.
So you caught me there. That really counts. Gentlemen's agreement.
We will not be taking JD Martinez or like the actual real major leaguer if there's anybody else on there. I'm going to get started offensively because we're doing plate appearances and innings pitched, right?
Yes.
So, that is tough. Wow. I'm going to go Drew Gilbert. Right. Give me Drew Gilbert. Let me take him off the board for you.
Yeah, I think Drew Gilbert is he's the best first pick. So then I'm the only one to do then, coming back at you. I'm going to double up on pitching. I'm going Christian Scott, Mike Vassell.
Ooh, okay. Christian Scott, Mike Vassell. I was looking, I was really hoping you were going to leave one of them. I knew you weren't leaving Christian Scott. I was hoping you were going to leave Vassell. I will take the butt man himself. I'm going to go Jose Budo as my next pick. So I'll be pick number 2. Pick number 3. Where are we going here on this one? I'm going to go with, give me Mark Vientos. I'm all about it.
I was hoping I was going to sneak in with the next pick. All right, I got to look at this now. It's also relevant because we saw the Mets the other day put out there where everyone's going to be reporting and some very cool things that Ryan Clifford's going to be with AA, that Colin Houck and Marco Vargas are going to be in High A, that Jeremy Rodriguez is going to be with St. Lucie. Lots of exciting things with this Mets team right now, where these minor leaguers could really start shooting up soon. We'll do some more prospect stuff, especially this year. We're working on trips to Binghamton and Syracuse to talk to these guys, so you guys can hear that. But I'm stalling. I need another pick now. This is going to be the weird one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really wanted Vientos. I thought you were going to let Vientos go. I might. I think that one of the guys I'm going to take is going to be.
Don't do it.
I'm going to take Joey Lucchese.
Okay, that's an obvious one, yeah.
And then I'm basically right on the sign between infielder and outfielder.
Okay.
And I think that is, I'm going to wind up going with, this is such good podcasting right now.
Good podcasting, yeah.
Such good podcasting. Jose Iglesias, infielder.
Okay. Jose Iglesias, so you've got four picks now, right? Yeah, because then this will be my four and five. And I think I'm going to add a wrinkle to this. We're going to do one wild card pick, and it has to be someone who's in double A or lower. I think that has to be
one wild card pick. Okay.
I'm going to take Austin Allen. I'm going to take the left-handed hitting catcher in the minors, Austin Allen.
I was looking at him.
I think that could be a real sharp pick right there. Yeah. And then on the way back from my last pick of the AAA draft, essentially, I said it earlier in the year that I think he's going to get a shot at some point. I'll take Luis Angel Acuña. I think he might get a look at some point this season.
All right. So again, with that, then I'll take my other AAA guy, Trace Thompson. And then for my guy, this is going to be the sneaky one. For my guy below. Oh, is he below? Is he reporting to AAA? Oh, I was going to do Nate Lavender. I forgot about Nate Lavender.
Oh, he's AAA. That would have been a good pick.
We almost should go back. Can I take Chim over Trace Thompson just because it's better for the podcast probably to have Nate Lavender?
Go with him. Yeah.
Nate Lavender is my last one. And then next one, sneaky. Paul Gervais.
Ooh, Paul Gervais. Dude, we're on the same wavelength here of thinking about relievers, of going with the reliever route for the guy. Is Gervais going to be AAA though, or is he AA?
I don't know. Let's check. If you want to kill me right now, you can kill me. I'm looking, but
yeah, I've raised a question. I'm concerned about that pick.
Oh my god. We both screwed this up so badly. We left a pretty good one down there.
We left a good one down there.
neither of us took Shintaro.
I think that's a handshake agreement too. No Shintaro.
Okay, that's fine. Because he's a major leaguer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Gervais is gonna be AAA, so I gotta take that one back. Damn.
Okay. Welcome back. Who do you want now instead?
I don't even know. Oh, this is a weird one. All right. This is just a pure 40-man roster pick. This is a strange one. Alex Ramirez.
He's
reporting to AA, but he's on the 40-man roster.
I got to look at the 40-man real quick now, too. I didn't even think about taking a look at the Mets 40-man roster to see who's in AA.
It's like the last one in AA. The only one AA in the roster.
Okay. That's going to be tough. Jet's not 40-man.
You can take Jet. It's AA.
Yeah, I know. I'm thinking about Jet. I'm thinking about... I want to take like a weird reliever. Like, I don't know why. We've been seeing a lot of Wilkin Ramos. I don't know if he's any good, but we've been seeing a lot of Wilkin Ramos recently in those spring training games. You know what? I'm going to take Jet. Give me Jet Williams. I'll take him as my final pick. Yeah, we got to go sexy. You can't go Wilkin Ramos. Guy might not even be on the team to start the year. Who knows?
All right, good stuff. But this is the first time going over an hour in a while, and it feels cool. Season's about to start. Happy we're finally here. We finally have baseball. I'm so excited for baseball. God, I put out two monster Twitter threads on Tuesday just about like all the cool things in spring training, and I was just like, it's still not enough. Like, I want real baseball. I want to talk about pitch sequencing and fucking pitchers and sliders and stuff. But, I mean, hey, like, if you guys made it this whole hour, shout out to you guys. Last thing we want to talk about briefly for a second.
I think we're going to, Mets Twitter. We're going to talk about, I think, just like a little bit of our plan too. I know I said briefly at the beginning, but like, if you guys want to just hear like thought process about like everything that's going on with us and what's happening, we'll probably just kind of have that conversation live with you guys, because why not? We want to keep you in the loop. But yeah, something interesting happened on Mets Twitter today. Shout out Grant Jenny Metz. He basically deactivated his Twitter account. We know that he's going on to work in baseball and other places right now, so he just doesn't have the time, and I'm sure he doesn't really want to take care of that while he's trying to actively get jobs and work for, baseball teams.
Just working full time for social media gigs. Very hard. I've done it. It's very demanding. You do a lot. These minor league teams, they don't give a ton of support, but they give you an opportunity. So that's kind of what he's doing, which is great.
Yeah. And unfortunately for Jenny Metz, he has become a bit of a punching bag in the Mets community. And I think it's unwarranted. I understand why people do it, because Grant, we love you, but you definitely have at times taken content and not given credit, and you've acknowledged it, you've apologized, and I think that's all you can ask for. It's fucking Twitter. It's not that serious at the end of the day. And to be fair, everybody else on Mets Twitter would do the exact same thing if they were in his position. So everybody who thinks they're holier than thou, I think you should take a look in the mirror. That being said, he put out a tweet basically saying like he's ending his account. Thank you for the great experiences, great time, a lot of great memories, all that good stuff. Bittersweet. It's awesome. He's going on to better, bigger things, but also it sucks because he built something up and he really seemed to enjoy it. And he really is genuinely diehard Mets fan. Really good dude. That being said, there was some tweets put out specifically by the New York Mets, which I think were in bad taste. And I just, it left a bad taste in my mouth. And we, whatever our platform is, Grant's a friend of ours, whether you like him or not, I don't think that was right what the Mets did. And I think it was a bit of a low blow for someone who, at the end of the day, has been relatively nothing but positive to the Mets as a whole, Mets community, Mets fan base. Whether you like him or hate him for stealing the content, who gives a shit? It's Twitter. It's not that serious.
It's just when you're a multi-billion dollar organization and your season's about to start, to punch down is just kind of rude. It's just really not right. It's kind of disrespectful, and it kind of like, I don't know. It's just, and it's even more ironic because like we've been inside, we know a lot of people who work at social media, but their Twitter has always been kind of like just a very bland, plain thing. It's like they do birthdays. They talk about some podcasts besides ours. They'll do call ups and call downs, official roster moves. And it for an account with over a million followers, it gets relatively middling engagement. So then when you see that their most engaged tweet in months, million impressions, is them taking a shot at a 20-something-year-old content creator who, again, like I don't think Grant, it's not like Grant put none of this on himself. Like there, he had stolen content before. He hadn't given credit. He started giving more credit now, but it's like for them to punch down someone like that, especially when, I don't know, like they Grant knows some people who run those Twitter accounts too. And it's just like, it's personal. It's disrespectful. It's mean. And it's just like everybody else. It's just someone trying to do something out there. Again, don't think he did it the right way all the time. Grant, you're listening. You're the man. You're still a friend.
We love you.
I say two separate texts. Like, congratulations for the job you got, and then oh my god, like that's the position you want to take as an organization. They stay so above so many things, mm-hmm. and this is the one you decide to take your shot at.
Yeah, like at the end of the day, love him or hate him, I don't think that this was right. And then the thing that kind of really set me off, and again, disappointed, because we know everybody, and this just doesn't feel on brand. It doesn't feel right. It doesn't really make sense. The Mets started liking the tweets about trolling him. And I was like, that feels even
ugly.
Like, what did he do to deserve this? That's so mean. All he is a diehard Mets fan who made some tweets that people got upset about because he used their content. If that makes you worthy of punching down with from a billion-dollar organization, that's a little upsetting to me. I think the people on Twitter, they have every right to punch up. Everybody's punching up. He's got 70,000 followers, which is fucking hard, by the way, on Twitter to build up that kind of following. Shout out to him. Fucking organizations around baseball should be interested in hiring this kid because he did it from the ground up. But for the team to then punch down and then like the tweets of the people making fun of him.
And just like we also know, because again, like we said, Grant's a massive Mets fan. He built up this following, built up his account in a very impressive way just because of how much he loves the team and how he's, every time there's news, he's on it in moments. Like that's what you need to build an account like that. And it's like you're addicted, you're obsessed with the team. And we know from the inside the awkwardness of where there's a team you love, but then there's another relationship with it that you don't like very much. And it's a weird thing. Like, I even just like, again, now we'll talk about this podcast a little bit more before we go. Like I have some weird feelings like going on opening day this week, like going into that stadium for the first time in a couple of years, like without being I know I'm not being not welcomed in, but before it was like we could walk in, we're saying hi to people. We're like, we're part of the fabric. And then it just kind of happened quickly and unceremoniously that we weren't anymore. And now other things have happened since then that made it weirder for us. It's just, it's a strange feeling. So like, I feel for Grant, I'm talking kind of to him right now, but just for the team that you love and that you've put so much into your life and that gives you so much positive emotion. Again, like the Mets, like fuck the Mets half the time because they've choked, they've blown leads, they've had horrible seasons, but like we still all love the Mets because they're the Mets. Like it. Like as bad as they've been before and as disappointed as they've made me on the field and front office stuff, nothing now, like the old regimes, you know, Freddie Van Wagner, fucking Jim Duquette, Steve Phillips,
Wilpon days,
Art Howe, Willie Randolph, the Wilpons. It's like, the list can go on and on. And we're in our late 20s, Grant's in his early 20s. But it's just like, you have to be able, and it's been hard for me and for us, like to separate what happened and what they still are. And like, that was something I was worried about as this was all happening the last few months. And we talked about it a lot, but it's just maintaining like the joy and like frivol of baseball watching and Mets fandom, and even this for us in Grant's content creation, when you feel like there was something weird that happened. And in Grant's case, something like they handled us much more respectfully than they did Grant, where this is like
way
just
much.
really mean to him. And it's gotta be hard emotions for him. And just if you want to reach out, like let me know. I'm down to talk.
Yeah, no, definitely. And in terms of like what we're gonna be doing with the podcast this year, I know we talked about it briefly, still keeping everything with the same series. Gonna still be going to games. I mean, the tickets are gonna be cheap. Like they had a hard time selling out when the team was good in the playoffs. So the tickets are gonna be cheap.
I think it's like $50.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to get in for cheap, which will be nice. And we're still going to be around the stadium. So again, you see us, come say hello. We're going to be doing like a lot more content because we can now. Like, as amazing, we were spoiled because we got to go to games for free and we were paid by the team and we had incredible access. Like, that stuff is going to change for us. We're not going to have those same opportunities to talk to players, to talk to guys. It's going to be a lot of grinding on our side and hopefully making relationships with players whenever we get the opportunity to. Like I have with Jeff, like I got to cash that in now. I have to DM him rather than just walking onto the field and being able to talk to him. But still plan on doing a lot. We're going to be able to have a lot more fun. When the team sucks, we're going to tell you they suck. When the team's doing really well, we'll still be super positive. We're going to be at the K-Corn. We're going to be at Ebbs, if it's even still called that. I don't know what's going on. We're going to be having beers with you guys, doing content, doing trivia with fans. Like, we just really want to make this podcast a lot more fun. And the really corny term that I've been using in conversation with James is like kind of just like build up like the Mets Stub podcast like universe in a way of just like, we don't want to necessarily only be a podcast that you listen to on Monday and on Thursday when series ends. We want you to come to our YouTube channel. We want you to come to our Instagram, interact with our stuff, see us at the game, have a beer, like whatever it is. We just want to kind of build that up because I think that's something that unfortunately we did lose a little bit going, you know, big shot, big corporate when we did join the Mets.
Yeah, it's community. We want to build community. And again, shout out you guys for this because like since the last couple months have been crazy. Like we basically doubled our Instagram following. Our reels are amazing. And shout out to both of us because we have some great ideas. We've added 1,000 followers to our Twitter account. Still kind of stagnant there, but it's good. Like I think even you and I, our personal pages, we've gotten better at because we kind of lost that thing that was hanging over both of our heads where it's like we know that people are, for lack of a better term, watching us. And not that they shouldn't have been, but it was definitely a weird feeling. I mean, I felt it personally too, like especially even working 2 full-time jobs and like trying to build up personal following. Like it's hard. There's a lot of stuff. You're running here, you're running there, you're doing things a lot of people tell you, to where now your creativity finally feels like it's flowing again. I'm excited for it to flow. And again, whatever happens with this Mets team, like we're gonna tell you, like we're gonna give you some stats, then we're gonna probably tell you some jokes and we're gonna say some bad words, but then we're just gonna hang out. And most often than not, we're gonna be at the field just drinking beer. Like that's basically the end of the day. What Mark and I are gonna, that's the end of the day is what we love to do. It's why I even started doing this in the first place. That's just like that's like the rank right there. Like City Field, drinking beer. Like that's what this show is gonna be about. Like we want to hang out, we want to connect with you guys, and we just want to make this as fun as possible because this is what we like to do. Like, we got to stop doing this last couple months because we icrested a little bit. We flew very close to the sun and the wings certainly melted and things. It's been a real awakening, real coming to grips moment these last couple of months, especially for me, someone who's been like, I don't even know what the fuck's going on in my life in general. But this summer, I really just want to go to City Field and have a beer. That's like all I'm looking forward to.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like you said, the reason we started this podcast was because we lived together and we were just like, we talk about the Mets for 30, 40 minutes a day on our own. Like, we should probably record this. And that's the feel we want to get back to. Because I think when we were doing the stuff with the Mets, again, we were limited on what we could say because we can't be like, oh, wow, like Max Scherzer really fucking sucks. Like, this guy really is shit in the bed. Can't say that because God forbid Max Scherzer hears that. And then we go on the field. Now there's a problem. Now we don't get to talk to anybody. Like, this was the kind of stuff that had to go through our head every single episode, and that's kind of why we would have episodes before the episodes that were not recorded so we could get everything out and then kind of, for lack of a better term, bullshit you guys for a little bit. But this season, completely different. The boys are back to actually talking about what's going on. I don't want to say being critical because I don't think that's fair, but being fair, like what is happening, what our opinion is on things, and at the end of the day, like James said, having a beer and watching some baseball because that's what it's all about. So we're really excited for this season. Hope you guys are too. A lot of great content coming at you. Make sure you're following us on all our social media at MetsUp on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Again, the YouTube channel will have more than just the podcast episodes. So if you want to see that content as well, go subscribe to the MetsUp podcast on YouTube. The ones who have come over and watched seem to be really enjoying it. So we hope the rest of you join us over there. And if not, if you just want to listen to the podcast after every series, Apple, Spotify, Google, whatever it is, drop us a rating, drop us a review. We really do appreciate it. It does help us grow in the world of insane amount of Mets podcasts that exist out there. Then we got to be the team with the most podcasts, right? The Yankees basically have John Boy and like a couple others. I feel like the Mets have like 9.
Yeah. And all the Mets ones are like seemingly kind of even. It's just like we're all basically the same and everyone seems like they're like listening to basically all of them, but they have very strong feelings about each one individually. But again, shout out you guys for choosing this one. We're happy you're here. We're going to stay here. We enjoy doing this and let's go Mets. Like opening day, like it's a bit definitely bittersweet feeling. Our favorite word in this podcast for probably both of us with this season starting and having a different feel to it, both with the team and both with our own pursuits of sports baseball media. But it's like the Mets are going to be playing baseball that matters either on Thursday or Friday. Now, again, that's really the only important thing.
And a little hint for those of you who made it this long. I think we're gonna do something called like, what do we call it, Booze Bucks, or we're basically gonna spin off beer money a little bit, and we're gonna do like a trivia game for you guys at the stadium. So if you see us with cameras, come up to us. You're gonna have an opportunity to maybe win some money. Get on our content. Be involved. So thank you guys, and we will catch you all on the next episode. Peace out.
Peace out. See you guys next time. Let's go, Mets.